Hello and welcome to another Future of Real Estate podcast. I'm Damien Wild and I used to be editor of EG. More on that in a moment. So it's the week before MIPIM, but more importantly than that, it's International Women's Day. And I'm joined later in this podcast by Amanda Clack, former president of the RICS, executive director at CBRE, where she runs a strategic advisory business. But more tellingly than that, I think more significantly today, especially than that, she's also the author of a new book called Managing Diversity and Inclusion in the Real Estate Sector, launched last week. So I'm no longer editor of EG, but I'm joined by the editor of EG, Sam McCleary.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you.
So all change as of this week, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's all change, but hopefully not too big a change that makes people feel worried, uncomfortable, but does make them feel excited.
Well, you can see that excitement on social media, and we've been at events this week where people have been congratulating you. So I think it's clear that there is excitement. I have been asked what I'm going to do, and I'm going to be...
Do you know yet?
I do know. I do know. I'm going to be publisher and editor-in-chief, so you're not getting rid of me entirely. But I imagine...
Which is a good thing, I must say. I'm very happy to have you close by still.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, I certainly don't want to walk away into the sunset or the darkness, for that matter. But what are you going to do? What's going to be different?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, well, first off, you might have realised that it is soon MIPIM. And quite a lot of us are going out there, so I'm going to be really utilising...
Almost 20 of us from EG.
Wow. I'm really going to be utilising that time to talk to as many people as I can to find out exactly what the industry wants from us, what kind of content they want, how they want to consume it, whether we're doing enough of the right stuff at the moment. I think it's, you know, the industry's in a very exciting... part of its journey at the moment. There's a lot of change going on, and I am very excited to be in this role now, where I can hopefully help them with that change, and we can report on those stories that teach and highlight and hopefully inform and entertain as well.
Well, I think you've been at the vanguard of that change around tech, around diversity particularly. And we were at a tech event this week, a fantastic tech event chaired by Emily Wright, our tech editor. And what struck me there was we've talked about tech and we've talked about diversity a lot. But Bill Hughes was on a panel from Legal & General Investment Management, of course. And he talked about the role that patient capital can play as well, that if capital isn't looking for a quick return, it's going to be more welcome than capital that is. And also it can play a more active role in requiring a different, a different mix of people within a community or on a project, and also the role that tech can play in delivering long-term change.
Absolutely. And I think... it was really interesting at that event to see that there is that I seem to be louder than you, which is upsetting me. But maybe that's just what
that's
you get from being editor. You have to be louder. I thought it was really interesting at that event, particularly with...
you're turning yourself down.
I am turning myself down. I've lost my train of thought. Uh-oh. Just the levels of different... There were so many different people at that event, which I think sort of echoed what Bill was saying and about the different roles that there are to be had in our industry, and particularly when we are thinking about that long-term investment, in that it's, you know, it's not just about surveyors anymore. It's about people who understand tech, people who understand finance, people who understand people, the psychology of the world in which we work. So yeah, I think there's going to be really fascinating stories going forward,
and I do hope there are many projects to point to where all of these things have come together, because it happened again today. King's Cross is a wonderful, wonderful development and rightly lauded, but it is the go-to example, and it worries me that we haven't got an armful of go-to examples.
I think we do, but I think that there are some that are better at marketing themselves than others. So I think, there are
King's Cross. None better than King's Cross.
None better than King's Cross. They are fantastic at it. And they've got, managed to get that people bit right, I suppose, where they've got into the psyche of the general public. And it, lots of people talk about it outside of our industry. But I think, there are other regenerations within London that can be just as good. I think Paddington, which no one will say off the top of their head is great placemaking probably, but if you actually go there, it's worked really hard at it, and it is a good example, but it's probably just a little bit harder to get to, or people assume it's harder to get to. Stratford, the same, I suppose, but people have a belief that it's hard to get to. They think that, as we were talking about the tech event today, there's some friction that gets in the way of being able to fully experience the placemaking, the vibe that Stratford or Paddington might have.
Well, maybe Crossrail or drones, both of which were discussed today, will do a better job of connecting and making those go-to examples as well. Should we get on to managing diversity and inclusion in the real estate sector? So Amanda came in to talk about that, and we were both at a book launch last week, and there was such a positive vibe there. And I think for me, there was something symbolic around back-to-back events at Rick's HQ on Parliament Square, one on LGBT, which you chaired a debate there the previous night, and then Amanda's book launch, a wider diversity piece. But for me, that was quite emblematic of a change that's going on. Did it strike you too?
Absolutely. And I think so important that bodies like the RICS puts their full weight behind the whole of the diversity agenda, because they have such great reach, not just in this country, but globally. It's a massive body, isn't it? And if it collectively uses the power that it has, it can make real change. So yeah, being able to host those two events back to back, and there was great crossover at those events as well, is most definitely a step in the right direction. And I think I was speaking to Amanda this week as well, and the reception that there seems to have been from the book for chief executives of companies buying it for their management team is phenomenal. It's only just out, and not many people have seen it yet, but I'm hoping, and I'm sure she is too, that if one company sees that a CEO has bought it for their management team, that we know how much people love competition in this industry, that someone else does that too, and eventually it will filter through. And let's hope for the day when we don't need a guidebook on how to manage diversity.
Absolutely. And all monies raised go to Land Aid as well, so another good reason to buy it. Shall we hear from Amanda?
Let's do it.
I'm joined by the longest-serving RICS president this century, Amanda Clack, also head of strategic advisory at CBRE and author of the new book, Managing Diversity and Inclusion in the Real Estate Sector. Welcome, Amanda.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Damien. Really excited to be here.
Great to have you here. And it's been a big launch week, hasn't it? You've been from studio to studio and event to event.
I think it's really exciting, and I think probably symptomatic of the fact that it feels like this is the right time to launch a book of this kind for the real estate and construction sector, just because there's so much that we still need to do to actually push the change that's needed. So yeah, really exciting week, and great that Estates Gazette are supporting us not only this week but also at MIPIM as well, so really appreciate that.
No, delighted to do so, and it is so important, as you say. And you say it's the right time because there's so much to do, but presumably it's the right time because ears are open.
I think we've gone through a period of change. If I look through my own career, which is like over 30 years in the industry, and kind of starting off, you'd walk into the room and invariably you'd be the only woman in the room. And actually the only aspect of diversity quite often as well. And I think what we're gradually starting to see is that that's starting to change very gradually. But actually,
when did that begin?
The real change, I think it's changed quite a lot in perhaps the last 5 years, but I think what we're seeing is a real momentum that's built up over the last couple of years, to be honest. And I think there's a danger in that as well, that people, and we talk about authenticity within the book, and I think that's incredibly important, because what you don't want to have is people that are non-authentic around this this subject matter, because actually people see through it very, very quickly. So I think authentic leadership is really, really important. And I think that change has started to manifest itself in that it's given people confidence. And again, you know, to kind of come out or to talk about issues like mental health, for example, to talk about disability in the workplace. And that in itself is the catalyst for change.
And you say in the book that that commitment needs to start at the top. Is it universally starting at the top?
I think you've got to, for setting the organisational culture, you look to the CEO and to leaders within the organisation to actually set that culture and tone. And very much a lot of the book is actually written to the CEO and to leaders in those organisations to help them to drive the change through their organisation and through the business. But effectively, there's something for everybody in here, because I think what's interesting, and it's almost back to your earlier question, Damien, is that senior leaders, I think, get that this is something that they need to be tackling and that they want to have and create the right organisation and workplace for people so that everyone can bring themselves to work every day. Equally, if you look at sort of apprentices and graduates, they'll select employers on the basis of the culture that they feel is inherent within the organisation. I think where a lot of the work has to be done is actually in the middle level of management, both in terms of how we retain that top talent within the profession and within the sector, but also how we really start to drive the change within the organisation itself. So there's something for everybody within this book, albeit what we're saying is it's got to start at the top.
Yeah, I think you've landed on a point that I was going to raise there, which is I've heard, you know, said repeatedly over the last 2 or 3 years, a period where there has been that progression and positive drive to change, that the people at the top get it, the new entrants in the industry get it, and it's perhaps those managers in the middle who've inherited the bad habits of previous generations or learned from those who perhaps didn't get it and are no longer in the industry. Have you seen improvements there?
I think I've seen some improvements, but I think actually that's still the pinpoint of where it goes wrong. And it was interesting because RICS launched the Inclusive Employer Quality Mark effectively in 2015. And through sort of like 2015-16, we were collecting the first set of data that formed effectively a benchmark for the sector by the sector. So we analysed around 50 organisations, both large and small, all the data they'd sent in from around 150,000 employees. And what was really coming out from that analysis was there's a real gap in terms of the training, the development and the skills that are needed in that middle management to both help to retain and develop that talent, particularly in the mid-career point, which is where, you know, it's really hard to get new people actually coming into the professions. And then you get them in, they can become disillusioned, they're not seeing their career progressed or supported, particularly if they're going off, you know, having families or have other family commitments, because actually it's, you know, sometimes it's actually supporting parents who are living longer as well. So, you know, it's how do we support those people in the mid-career where it's really, really important for them to see and feel supported? And that requires the training of the middle managers. Interestingly, RICS now has, I think it's around 300,000 people that are signed, or 300,000 employees from 170 organisations that are now signed up to the IEQM. And interestingly, it's the same kind of thing that's still coming out. So it hasn't moved far enough. And I think that's where the real work has to be done. Interestingly, with the book, CBRE are just giving out 150 copies to all of our executive directors so that they get a chance to read it. And we're kind of doing a lot of work around actually helping and supporting them in particularly looking at returner programmes and, you know, what can we be doing in the workplace to really help and support that mid-tier career.
So is there anything we can do to accelerate this change and embed it amongst that middle layer?
I think, you know, one of the things we can do is really look at how we can put training programs in place to support. So things like unconscious bias are really important. Thinking about how you undertake appraisals with people, how when people come back from work that you spend spend time with them to actually understand, you know, what's changed in their lives and how that's going to affect their ways of working. And I think also that's where things like flexible working really come in. So actually it's not about presenteeism, it's about giving people the flexibility to work wherever they want to work. And actually it's about outputs and outcomes rather than, you know, needing to be sitting there in front of your line manager to be seen to be at work. So there's lots of things that you can do to adapt a workplace environment and indeed culture. You know, wellness at work's become, I think, a really important aspect as well in terms of the last few years. We're seeing a lot of that in terms of both actually our clients really looking at it and we ourselves looking at it. And, you know, just simple things that you can do in the workplace, like dress for purpose. So if you haven't got client meetings, wear something that you're comfortable in if you're going to be in the office. So all of that just helps to kind of change the balance of the culture. And I don't know if you've seen that there's a fantastic little cartoon sketch that's come out just recently called Pearl. And it really does make me smile because it's about the first pink ball of wool that goes into quite a male-dominated environment. And she has to re-knit herself into a suit. And then, you know, a yellow ball of wool turns up, and rather than kind of exclude the yellow ball of wool, she kind of embraces her, and what you end up is this fantastic workplace environment that then becomes much more colourful. And I love the analogy and I love the pictures and that kind of image can create. And it's why, you know, we're really proud in this book that we've got Farley Katz from The New Yorker, who's done all of the illustrations for us. He's even put a little illustration of himself in there, which is fantastic. And he read the book before he agreed to do the illustrations for us. And for me, and I've tried this with a couple of the audiences that I've been talking to about the book, those images really bring the messages alive, and actually it's the images that people remember, so they're really powerful.
Absolutely, they look fantastic. I suppose, going back to some of the conversations that I've had recently around diversity and how it's being embraced by the industry, I think, you know, there are, through events and through conversations, gender, you know, very much in focus, sexuality very much in focus as well. And I know there was an event at RICS this week as well. But I wonder whether everything is being prioritised to the same degree. You know, it is still a very white industry. It's, you know, there are efforts to broaden access to those of very different backgrounds, but it's still quite a narrow access route. Do you see a hierarchy there, and is it necessary?
I don't think you want to have a hierarchy. I think it's really important we don't, actually. You know, I think the reason why gender's being very much on the radar is because 50% of the working population is by default female. And when you look at some of the statistics, you know, only 14% of professionally qualified surveyors are female. The good news is when you start to look at trainees and graduates, that number goes up to 24%. But equally, if you start to look to more of the construction disciplines, it actually drops to 6%. So that kind of like, that is definitely a priority that we have had to tackle. But I don't think it should be gender over any other form of the protected characteristics. And I think, you know, when you look at BAME or if you look at mental health or disability in the workplace, actually those are just as important if we're going to attract that top talent into, you know, the sector and indeed into the professions in time as well.
Do you think they're getting the same level of attention?
No, they're not. And it's for that reason. You know, one of the things I'd say, you know, again, back to the book, is Chapter 7's a must read for everybody. I love it. Every time I called in some favours from people that I knew around the industry and slightly beyond it, because of what they bring in terms of all of those aspects of diversity and inclusion, from apprentices, from people that BAME, people with disabilities, people who, you know, just happen to be female. But actually it's about them telling their stories that I think it's really important to help get that message across and change the dial on those aspects as well. So we're hoping to raise the profile a little bit on some of those areas that maybe have had less profile than others in the past, because it's about everybody.
So something for everyone to identify with there. So as you say, we're running an extract at EG the weekend before MIPIM and the edition that will go down there. And there's one section called How to Walk the Talk. I won't ask you to list everything in there, but I think that's a phrase that people in this industry would identify with. And I just wonder how we all walk the talk on diversity.
Well, I have to say, this is one of my favourite Farley Katz images. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, Damien, but it's basically, it's somebody walking their dog on a lead, and then there's another person who's walking a pair of false teeth on a lead. And she's saying to this person, have you never seen somebody walk the talk before? And I think the reality is, walking the talk is so important. So it's about authenticity, it's about being a leader, about being a visible leader as well. It's about setting the vision and the strategy for this agenda within the organisation. And I think everybody in the organisation has a responsibility to walk the talk. So whether you're the newest apprentice just starting out, or whether you're the CEO of one of the major firms, it's all about how can you get out there and be authentic and talk about issues and actually treat people as people. So you're creating this really great environment for people to actually be able to thrive and to bring themselves to work every day.
Okay, that illustration is in EG, as are others, but to read them, to see them all, you'll have to buy the book, of course. I remember we shared a glass of whiskey in 2017 at Expo. We were on a stand.
I thought we weren't going to talk about that.
Well, I'm going to bring up the whiskey. And we started talking about the book that you were doing on diversity. I said it would be fantastic to extract that. And you said, well, it's in German.
Yes.
And so this was that book? This was the first pass at this book?
Not quite, is the honest answer. So what we did was, actually, it was an idea that was hatched at Expo Real in 2016, and we basically said, so co-authored that with Martin Vermeulen and Judith Garbler, and basically we said, wouldn't it be a great idea to write a book, because I was getting so many questions about people understanding the issues, but what are the practical steps that we can take, what do we need to do? And there was a real market around the DAC markets to actually really start to develop that. So we wrote the book really quickly. So, you know, basically it was done within a year and published, as you said. We had a glass of whiskey in 2017 around basically, that particular market. And it was great. And what we wanted to do with this particular one was move it on a level. With a bit more time and reflection, you learn a lot. It was the first book certainly I'd ever written, and you know, you learn a lot by doing it. And actually, you learn a lot. I've learned a lot about the market and the industry, and it's changed such a lot in that time, and there's so much more to write about. So really, this is a complete rewrite. As you say, it's now in English, which is great. We were in a really great position that we actually had a number of publishers that were effectively bidding to write the book to publish the book for us. And all of the royalties we're giving to Land Aid. So this is about a win-win situation. So we're hoping that we're going to raise lots of money for Land Aid as well by selling copies of the book.
Great. And if you look forward, where do you think we will be in 5 years' time, and where would you like us to be?
I hope where we'll be is, you know, I think things like the book, I talk about this as actually it's about action, not words, which is quite ironic when we're talking about a book. But I hope it starts to have... to provide a catalyst for change and for people to have conversations around the subject on diversity and inclusion. And I think it's a lot about confidence. And I think going back to one of your earlier questions, Damien, I think, you know, what we've got now is this complete ability to have more confidence in the workplace, to talk about who we are and, you know, what we can truly bring. And I hope that confidence grows over the next 5 years, and that people just feel that they can really sort of talk about who they really are with their line managers in the workplace, and not feel that they're going to be discriminated against as a result of that. So for me, it's about giving people confidence, and also for giving managers and for leaders that element of confidence. So wouldn't it be great if I started a Women in Project Management specific interest group 25 years ago with a number of other people, and we always said it would probably have a lifespan of maybe 5 years, but couldn't see it lasting much beyond 10 years. And
because everything would be
perfect by then. And of course, the reality is, it's not. And you know, that network, it was always open to men and women. That was really important to us, and it was fantastic. Actually, we had four of the early chairs got together at the 25th anniversary, and we said what was really exciting was the ethos and culture that we sort of said was important for setting up that group was still evident in where it was today. But I don't think any of us would have foreseen that that group would have lasted 25 years. I hope by things like this book, by, you know, some very high profile people talking about whether it's LGBTQ, whether it's BAME people, whether it's you know, people who happen to be female, talking about what it's like to work in this sector, that it helps inspire other people to come in and to join, and particularly where we really need it to happen, which is at the schools level. So, you know, getting people excited about the property profession in schools is really, really key.
Okay, well, we'll get you in for an update and maybe, you know, a school report in a year's time.
That'd be fantastic.
Okay, Amanda, thank you very much and good luck with the book.
Thanks, Damien.
So that was Amanda, and as she said there, and as she said at the book launch last week, if you only read one chapter, read the chapter on perspectives, which is, it's not her voice coming through, or indeed the voice of her co-author, Judith Gabler, there from Rick's. It's the voices of different people from diverse backgrounds in the industry. Have you got any key takeaways from the book, or how do you plan to take it forward in EG?
Well, we're literally taking it forward in EG this week, in that we have an abridged version of Chapter 9 with some of those amazing cartoons by Farley Katz, who, if anyone who was at the launch would have seen, has the most amazing moustache.
Amazing. Tash envy.
Me too. So we'll be doing that. And actually, as part of that, and as we are speaking on International Women's Day, I'm obviously talking to you from the saddle of my bicycle on the way down to Mipham.
We didn't think through those timings and logistics there, but this is live.
This is the magic of podcasts. Emily and I do it all the time. It's okay. As part of, as well as having a abridged chapter from the book in the issue this week, we have an entire section actually just sort of helping to champion diversity. It, you know, will be high on my agenda. It won't be all we're talking about, so don't worry about that. But it's important. So we are celebrating all the great things that are being done around diversity in the mag this week. So you will be able to read that chapter. We've got a great interview with Kayla Fenn-Smith and Vivian King of Real Estate Balance. So Kayla joined them not too long ago, obviously after some time at Landsec. We have an interview with the now predominantly female team at Elandi. And the wonderful Priya Shah has written us a piece around her study of the impact of race and culture on housing and planning, which is really fascinating. And if people want to read more on that, there is a link there to email her to get her full academic research on that. And
is it just in South Africa? She went on a study.
Yeah, she just looked at an area in Durban. But there are lessons to be learnt for us back here too, and anywhere around the globe. So that's fascinating, and much, much more. And of course, all the usual stuff that you get in EG, and everyone can, of course, go to the website and get even more information.
And they will get lots more next week when we take that big team down to Mipham. And Amanda is appearing on one of your panels down there, I think, as well.
She is, yeah. So we have a session in the London stand on diversity, which very much looking forward to. And it's one that's not one of ours, but one we are obviously supporting, and supporting as Rewire as well. But we have a lot from Team EG as well, don't we?
We do. I think Tuesday we take over much of the Palais. We have a morning on UK cities and investment opportunities, and an afternoon on tech with a bit of London in between. But I think between you, me, Emily and the rest of the team, we're travelling to the Midlands, to Manchester. I think Emily's off to Scandinavia. I'm doing something in Germany.
Emily can't stay away from Oslo.
I know. I don't think even she can explain the connection there, but it's clearly deep-rooted.
We may even play chess with some grandmaster who beat Bill Clinton in about 16 seconds. So
Bill Clinton, Bill Gates.
Bill Gates, yeah, okay.
Both, perhaps.
Yeah.
6 seconds each.
Yeah. He's going to be playing 10 people at the same time, apparently, which I don't know how to play chess, but I might go and have a go.
Well, we'll report back on that, probably on the back page rather than the front.
Okay. I'm editor, so it might be on the front page, never know.
Okay, well, you need to get back on your bike.
I do.
Okay, Sam, thank you, and thank you for listening.